Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of May 2021. I'm your host, Robert, and they say that running away is easy, but it's the living that's hard. To which I say, fuck that shit. You ever actually try running away? It's not as easy as you think. And with me, I have.
To experience this program in the highest fidelity possible, please attach your digital's analog converter into your phone. Unless you don't have one, in which case you're a basic bitch! Suck it.
And
I got no quip for this round. I don't know. I must have got some shit. I was too busy looking at what the fuck I missed. Or what I need to remind myself.
Maybe you didn't miss much. I guess it depends on what you prioritize in terms of listening to things. But before we get into any of the business proper, I would like to say this formally on the podcast. As of, you know, the day before we're recording this, the most recent new episode was 224, this podcast is now taking up real estate space on Spotify.
Woo!
We have joined the 21st century of talking mad shit about Daniel Ek while using his platform. We'll make sure he regrets every second of it.
we're not getting paid, are we?
Well, not by Spotify, we aren't.
No. We're not fucky enough to get paid by Spotify.
Yeah, maybe we should start lying about COVID vaccines. And just start talking about some stupid drug of choice.
If DMT's only we didn't have integrity.
Yeah. Sucks when you actually have, you know, respect for the truth and basic human decency. But what do I know? And as just a side note, I finally managed to get myself a new pair of headphones. New-ish. I found a working pair of the old model I was using for like $40 on eBay. So these should hold me over until I can find something more newer. Hopefully around Black Friday. Maybe the deals will be good to me then. But at least now I have one with two functioning ears. And so with that introductory business out of the way, yeah, the month of May, again, this was, I mean, there were some things, but like not a lot that was like, I absolutely have to hear this in terms of prioritizing. It was just, I might as well listen to it. Why not? So let's do our, recap first off of what the hell is it exactly that came out this past month? And before we get into the first, day proper on May 5th, there was a Mitski soundtrack, This Is Where We Fall, which I think was for some graphic novel thing that I'm pretty sure was released by Z2, which is a publisher the publisher that does a lot of those, they did stuff like the Gorilla's Almanac, and I'm pretty sure that Skillet graphic novel, if anybody gives a shit about that being a thing. But anyway, moving on to May 7th, 2021, some of your new releases included Sincerely Cantrell from Young Boy Never Broke Again, When Got Was Great by the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, the newest album from the band Ice Age was Seek Shelter, the sophomore effort from soul singer Rag and Bone Man with Life by Misadventure, one of two albums we got featuring posthumous hip-hop icons. There was Sarface and the late MF Doom with a surprise release, Super What. From the duo of Ali and AJ, there was A Touch of the Beat Gets You Up on Your Feet, Gets You Out, and Then Into the Sun. Still shorter than that one fucking Bring Me the Horizon album title. There was BB Rexha with her new album, Better Mistakes. And then the guys in Weezer with Van Weezer. Moving on to May 14th, 2021, some of your new releases included Miles Kennedy with The Ides of March. Shame on you for releasing this in May and not March, sir. Get with the times. We had a new album from producer Fatima Al-Qadiri with Medieval Femme. From 21 Savage, we had Spiral from The Book of Saw. Did anybody actually watch that movie? Because I didn't. I haven't heard anyone say a thing about it, to be honest. From Kodak Black, new mixtape, Haitian Boy Kodak. From Lil Skies, dropping a deluxe edition of the album Unbothered, originally from January 2021. Yeah, a lot of deluxe editions these days. From St. Vincent, there was Daddy's Home, and a whole bunch of bellyaching about the press. The Black Keys with Delta Cream, Georgia Smith with Be Right Back, and of course, Platinum, but you can have a little bit of features as a treat this time, apparently. J. Cole with the Off Season. In between that and May 21st, though, there was a new album from Panopticon on May 15th with And Again Into the Light, as well as a new EP from Lisa coming out May 19th with Ladybug. The 19th. I get it. Anyway, moving on to May 21st, we have the newest EP from The Devil Wears Prada with Zombie 2. New EP from the band Mannequin Pussy with Perfect. The Tragically Hip dropping the EP Saskadelphia. Huh. Funny, considering how long that bad album covers video came out. There was a new Georgia Animal Drow album, VWETO3. There was a new collaborative project between Benny the Butcher and 38 Spesh with Trust the Sopranos. Mac Homie dropping a new album, Pray for Haiti. Young Ma with her newest album, Off the Yak. And Blake Shelton with Body Language. There was also Olivia Rodrigo dropping the album Sour. And unfortunately, a new 21 Pilots project, Scaled and Icy. And moving on to May 28th, 2021, there was, of course, the second full-length album from Noise Rockers Black Midi with Cavalcade. There was apparently a new Of Mice and Men EP called Bloom. There was a new Gwar EP, The Disc with No Name. We had a new EP from Wife's Funeral with Smoking Mirrors. Nobody Cares Moby with an album called Reprise. We got two full-length albums dropping on the same day from Extreme Metal Act Portal with Avow and Hagbulbia. From electronic producer Perturbator, his newest album, Lustful Sacraments. And the other album from a posthumous rap icon, Exodus, from rapper DMX. So, yeah, there was stuff of note, but it didn't feel like it was as in, you know, as saturated with absolute prioritizing as other months we've gotten. I mean, we're heading into the next month, so maybe that'll change as June continues to roll along. You know, we're still only in the first half of that month. But anyway, with that out of the way, now it's time to get into the specifics, digging into the nitty-gritty of what it was we were actually listening to this past month, as well as anything I probably missed in the listing. I always miss a thing or two. So, as always, Alex, you have the floor first off.
Okay. So, since I really couldn't be bothered to listen to that Devil Wears Prada EP, can you blame me? I don't have that much here. I only have five titles to go through, and the first two I'm going to be kind of short. One is good and one is bad. I'll go with the bad one first. Van Weezer. Oh, God.
Yeah.
So, just take what I said about OK Human, replace the strings with some overdriven guitars, and there you go. That's what I think about it, but that wouldn't be enough. Because this album actually has interpolations of other tracks. Namely, the song Blue Dream samples Crazy Train quite egregiously, which, wow, that is both lazy and lame enough for me to shut the album off and just not care about the rest, because at least you're crediting the samples. Good on you, but still, that's just really lazy.
Didn't you all have a whole covers album however long ago just for this?
Yeah, they did, but apparently that wasn't enough, so yeah, it's just whatever. Don't care anymore. What I do care about, though, is this new Black Midi album, Cavalcade, and this will be very short and sweet. John L. made me feel drunk and on some kind of hallucinogenic substance, and that's all I needed. It was great! Frantic jazz fusion with a lot more weirdness to it, right up my alley. Although, the bossa nova groove on the second track was a little weird for my taste. A little too weird, really. Yeah. Respite, though, was fantastic. Okay, now for this new EP from Lisa, Ladybug, everyone's favorite J-pop singer, putting out an EP in commemoration of her 10th anniversary of her debut performance or album, I'm not entirely sure. I just read debut in the Billboard article, but, you know, whatever. And this starts out more pulsing rock-oriented, full of really heavy guitar riffs and fast drum grooves with the opening tracks Runaway and Another Great Day, both offering two different aspects, the former being more of a crowd banger, and the latter ebbing and flowing with lower tune chug riffs and a more melodic chorus to counteract the peppier verses. All sort of blends together, but it wouldn't surprise people to know that some of these are movie insert songs, like Surprise being in the upcoming film The Door of Summer, supposed to come out later this year in Japan. It definitely sounds like a movie pop track, and it's pretty good. There are also some neat collab productions on here, Viva La Midala being one such, with a member of a Japanese reggae punk band working on it. Yes, you heard me. Japanese reggae punk band.
That is a combination of words.
It makes sense when you hear it, but yeah, as a whole, this delivered as a fun little side EP because, yeah. More Lisa's always good, and God knows she's been enjoying all those Gurenge royalties lately. Okay, so I had to do a coin flip between a pair of albums to determine which one I was going to focus more on. And it was between that St. Vincent album and another one. This one won the coin flip. Sorry, St. Vincent, maybe next time. So now I'm going to take my first real step into mainstream Zoomer pop with Olivia Rodrigo and her debut album, Sour.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I know we've dabbled a little bit in it with acts like Billie Eilish and Lil Nas X, but this is the straightforward cookie-cutter shit right here. This is as pure Zoomer pop as you can find. So, Olivia Rodrigo, Disney star, now teen pop icon. She has her album out. It was originally going to be an EP, but that one song did so well they made it into a whole album. And as Blink-182 once sang, nobody likes you when you're 17. So this album has a bit of an uphill road to climb if it doesn't want to feel dated in a few years. Oh, and to the Apple Music crew who write all the album descriptions, Jagged Little Pill for Gen Z, that's a real tall order there. But I'll get into it. Which means we gotta talk about the song here. Driver's License, the song that launched a million TikTok videos and brought this young woman to superstardom. I will get into the backstory of it because I just don't care that much about it. So I'll talk about the composition of it. And as it starts, it's fine, it's serviceable, bit of a downbeat piano ballad. But it does have the aura of, I'm 17 and my life revolves around my social status. So, you know, It does the job it's supposed to do. It turns out it's fine enough. Then the bridge hits, and suddenly it clicks. The teen angst in the lyrics is amplified on a large stage, and I can't describe it. It just works. It's weird to describe without playing that part of the song. You'll know it when the bridge hits. You'll know it when the choir's up there, you know, doing all that. As a whole, the song really does work when you get to that point. It's a little slow at the start, but it builds, and honestly, it delivers. But that's just the one big hit. How does the rest of the album fare? Well, the opening track, Brutal, has a more of a grungy rock tone to it, almost sounding mid-90s Riot Girl in its scope. Kind of unexpected from the tone of the big single that it's going to lead people into buying the album, or in this case, listening to the album. I forgot, I'm old, people don't buy albums anymore. Shame on me. Yeah.
Even though you all should, for reasons.
Yes, because buying albums are what cool kids do because you get to own physical copies of it in your hands. Or, you know, Yeah, or, you know, digital files on your computer that you can transfer to other devices.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that. The next song, Traitor, comes in, and it feels more like a prelude to Driver's License with its lyrical content and mood, how it just flows into the big song. And I'll give her all the credit in the world. Her vocal approach is working because at this point in the album, now I hate this guy that fucked around behind her back, and that seems to be the one recurring theme of the album. At worst, it can sound like a live journal diary, but at best, it comes across as a purging of shattered feelings. And yes, I did notice Jack Antonoff and Taylor Swift in the songwriting credits on One Step Forward, Three Steps Back. The hallmarks of their songwriting style is on full display there. You thought I wouldn't notice, but I did. And I'll give credit to the song Good For You, having kind of an early Paramore tone to it. I picked up some similar melodies to Misery Business in there, which is, you know, always good to hear. The Gen Z appeal here is strong, I'll give it that, but unlike, say, acts who desperately want that relatable appeal, like AJR, or half music acts on TikTok, or that friggin' Minecraft streamer, the guy with the face, whatever his name is, Nightmare, I don't know, I don't care. Compared to all those, the appeal here comes from a more natural place, because, yeah, she was 17 when she wrote all this. That's your target demographic. And it's all set to music that can catch the attention of a younger set of ears, and you can tell that what she's thinking about does come from a place of genuine sincerity. So, yeah, I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting this album to be as good as it was. It's a very solid and strong piece of modern pop. The production, if anything, does sound a little copy-paste in parts, but I can give it a pass just this once. This was honestly a good and pleasant listen. Didn't overstay its welcome, so hey, well done here. Well done. Now, we have to wait for the follow-up to see where things will go from here. That's going to be the big test of her lasting impact on the pop music scene.
That's going to be intriguing.
Yeah. All right, and now for my top pick of the month. Comes to us from White Moth, Black Butterfly, The Cost of Dreaming. A few years ago, this band put out an astoundingly sonic album in Atone. I love that album, it's fantastic. Now they're back with their third album, The Cost of Dreaming, and from the opening moments of Ether, this album sets a really spacious mood and tone for what it's setting out to do. Or so you think, with Prayer for Rain immediately following, shifting the mood to dark synth pop with some more catchy hooks and beats to it. The same tone carries through on the track The Dreamer, the big single, the intro being caked in backwards reverb to accompany Jordan Gore's lovely vocals and Daniel Tompkins' resonant chorus lines. I've probably said this before, but a project like this shows that Daniel Tompkins can do more than the usual metal vocals and tesseract, and in this case, it's being set to a soundtrack of spacious, cinematic synth-pop, perfectly showcased on the track Heavy Heart. But there are still some surprises to be found, like on the songs Use You and Darker Days, with some pretty heavy bomb bass. And I have pretty bassy headphones, so it makes everything sound that much more bombastic when they're just shaking right against your ears. It's a fun time. I can't quite call this modern pop in the same sense as Olivia Rodrigo, though, with all the genre blending and fusing, leaving the sounding more postmodern, if that makes any lick of sense. I mean, there's even a saxophone solo on Darker Days. You won't hear that in more typical pop music. And throughout this album, despite the prevalence of more upbeat pop structures, there is a bit of a sense of melancholy in the lyrics. Bloom, Sands of Despair, Under the Stars, Liberate, they're all carrying a strong presence of longing and lament to the lyrics. And I guess all that makes sense when you consider that this album was written throughout all of last year. You know, the year we all went crazy. But it all comes out as such a fantastic final product with how everything is just presented with its wide musical scope, and it's just the sound of it. It's just so, you know, large and wide. It's great. And yes, this is a bit of a departure from their last album, but it does serve as a musical step forward in the cultivation of their sound. And I found this album to be excellent in that regard. And it's all capping off with the closing track, Spirit, just an ethereal piece of cinematic pop that, above all, gives a message of optimism for the future, that we can get through our hardships. The lines here say, "When life's broken, it can be remade, and no one gets it right, and no one ever will. So bathe your head in life, because we were born to fly." I cannot really replicate what I felt listening to this album and listening to that final track, especially while I was taking the notes here. It's one of those songs that will move you in that way. I really need more people to check this band and album out, especially you Tesseract fans out there. Go check out what some of you have probably been missing for a while. Do not sleep on this. Oh, and also, Bloom has a fantastic keyboard solo in there that is just tasty. I love this album. Top 10 year in contender right here. It's that good.
Very interesting. Looks like I got two things I gotta remember to get to from this past month.
Yeah, and that's it for me. It was a bit of a light month, but there's gonna be more to come in June if what we ran through last week was any indication.
Yeah, that was something. But anyway, now with that out of the way, time to move on to the middle part of this podcast. Mark's turn to talk about some albums. You have the floor.
All right, yeah. This month has been, it's been a sort of a slow month. Like, I have 8 projects to tell. Although, thankfully, no low lights, which is good, because I went through 2 last month and 1 the other, which... That's fine. That's enough. I can sit there for a this move a break from that. And now I get to these projects, which I got mostly little to say about most of them. I'm just going to be kind of quick with them without trying to ramble through them, which I hope I don't ramble through them. But yeah, here we go. So one project you missed. Actually, here's a project that we all kind of missed, because I admit, I didn't find this out until, like, the last day of May. A new EP or / album, whatever, I don't know, from Fire Tools. Called, called I Can't Die. Which, I kind of wish I found this earlier. Because it's a short project. It's like 10 tracks, but it's more like 6 songs and 4 instrumentals of some of the songs. Yeah, I gotta say, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Because some of their essential work, essential style of their, of mixing, like, weird genre elements, like, the first track on the here called Shitting Into Gaia's Heart.
Wow.
Yeah. It has this glam, this very glam 80s, 90s rock type of sound, which I kind of, like, I love the vocals. It was like, yeah, I try to make it out, but I can't. I don't try to, but yeah, for her, it's like, I kind of get into this. And it got more interesting titles like Dark Light, Bright Up the Soul, and Metropolis Part 6 or 7 IDK. Okay. Yeah, I'm like, what sounds like sounds like, you know, the title track, I Can't Die. They all got that signature Fire Tools style there. Like, you do get some ambient expert taste in there. You got those lo-fi sounds, which y'all know from my last 2 projects that we all listened to, and, you know, for the harder work. But yeah, this is. This is at the part with what she been releasing the whole time. You know, the last couple times we talked about it on this roundup. But yeah, I say it's worth listening to. And if you can, you can buy it on Bandcamp. And last time I checked, I'm pretty sure it cost about $4.20. Yeah, $4.20.
I get it.
But yeah, I gotta say this, I'm very good. And now, since I have to call, didn't this shit happen last month or the previous month? Or, yeah, you get it. First, let's get into, guess what time is it?
Griselda?
Yep, Griselda. Two times, actually. First it goes with Ben the Butcher and today's supposed to be with his mixtape from his, from his other thing he doing, Trust the Sopranos, which, you know, basically is on his Black Soprano family label, which, you know, he been doing things on. And I gotta say, you listen to one Ben the Butcher mixtape, whatever you've been listening to the past few months, like if you listen to, you know, the Plus I Met 2, you listen to is, but someone like, you kind of get what you get with here, like you still know what they're all about, you know, with drug talk, all that life, do shit all around that shit, like, it's basically what we all get from, it's still got some hardened beats from, hardened beats from him, and Duke's still rapping, 38 Splash, which I'm guessing he's a producer, I guess he's the one, you know, doing this thing on there. And got some, you know, features of people from his Black Soprano family circle, like people like El Camino, Shane Noir, Rick Hyde, Heem, a bunch of other motherfuckers that I'm pretty sure I think associated with him most of the time, which I was able to get. Like, it's not really one. It's not really one I can say. Like, I'm not gonna say it's mind blowing, but more like, You get what you get with this mixtape. Like, you get Ben the Butcher spinning some balls for some hard ass beats, and they go pretty good here. Like, you go good here. That's yeah. But yeah, also kind of like the fact that the album cover is basically the globe in a Pyrex. In a Pyrex measuring cup. Like, it's the world in the cup. Weighs about, let's see, Something grams. I don't fucking know. Anyway, this album is, you know, it's alright. Pretty alright. And now more to Griselda with a different twist. It's this from Mike Hami. Remember him?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. He's the guy who I put his last album, Mike's Hard Lemonade, on my best of list. And that's the one that, well, the one whose album cost a grip just to get, at least on physical. Yeah, you look that up. Anyway, it turns out before then, him and Russell gonna have some beef, but they worked it out. They worked it out, talked it out, and now there's stuff on this label, which this one I'm gonna call Pray for Haiti. Get it? Pray for Haiti. Yep. Yeah, it's all that shit. Yeah, which makes sense. Like Makami is, you know, he is Haitian, so this kind of makes sense. And even though like my only experience with Makami is the last album that I listened to, this one pretty alright too. Like, it does crossing the border, cause our territory sort of with considering what's not gonna actually produce the whole album with him having a feature now and then. Maybe I think he's featured like three times. I think him being a feature with him, the guy Fiam, and somebody named Melody Charles, which okay, I gotta say, this is I'm like I said, like my comedy, he does have a bit of an interesting thing amongst some of his rapping, like you know his own Asian heritage, all that shit. And I was like, even got some good production in here, like, you know, some people like Conductor Williams, like all the people, like, there's even like one track in here, Murder Season, which I like, which I kind of heard during the telling of that one song the one song that Westside put out as a video, but I don't think it'd be a Mock Homie joint. Yeah, kind of dig it. Like, it's just like fully I do with, of course, Lagone and Keisha Plum. You get the 26 letter, which are all right. You get, you know, it's like Macro Jackson. Yeah, just go with it. The Stella Ray Theory, which kind of like, yeah, and what I gotta say is, this one, yeah, it's a bit interesting. Like, it's a bit interesting, you know, seeing this dude who once had a beef with Gunn. Now they worked it out. Worked it out with no problems, which you know, that's good. That's good, because usually hip hop always ends with, you know, the other bad way. But this is an interesting problem all around. Like, I think the second half is stronger than the first half, to be honest. Some tracks are cool. But yeah, this is an all around decent project. And I say, like, give it one chance and you listen to it. But yeah, now when I say this is a repeat of what I've been to the past few months, now usually it's either something from Griselda or something from The Alchemist. Guess what? Turns out there's another Alchemist produced album. This time he teamed up again with his old buddy, Currency, with Colbert Coupe, which I just checked the album because I'm like, oh, well, okay, Alchemist and Currency had an album, which, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Currency. Like, I don't hate him. Like, I think he's the right. Last time I checked him out was that project he did with Freddie Gibbs, Fetty, which is like way back in 2018. I believe I talked about that, and I was like, you know what, I'll check it out. And this is decent too. This is decent too. I still like the smooth difference for the Alchemist all around, which is pretty good. Like, and Currency's out there as a rapper. And Currency's a decent rapper. I got nothing on his home, which they're gonna do that. And he got some strong features in here. Like, you got features from Fiend, Smoke Deezza, the late project from Mobb Deep doing the verse. I'm guessing they got something from way back, which it's good to hear Prodigy again, even though, hey, rest in peace. It was a verse from something, but it's good to hear him again. And no surprise, the song I like is Kim Clark with Freddie Gibbs with Scottie Pippins, which is one of my favorite tracks of this album, which I sort of bump through almost every day since I listened to it. Oh yeah, and do you know what Tony has on a track called? The final track of this album is called Full Metal. And I don't think there's a Full Metal Alchemist reference, but fuck it. I just like, there's actually a track called Full Metal. I've been hoping something called Full Metal would be associated with something with The Alchemist, with that title, with at least part of it, or anyway is, but yeah, I won't say it's the strongest. It's a decent album or project, whatever. But in terms of you know, Alchemist related projects, I still think the one he did with Armor Hammer is the strongest one so far, because there's been much I heard. This year so far has been kind of meh for me, to be honest. But yeah, this project is decent. I would give some good listens to it. Right. I'm doing a quick one on this one. Georgia Ann Mildrow, the VWETO3. It looks good instrumentals. I mean, it's a good sound to vibe to. Some sounds just to lay back, relax, just lounge around, smoke, drink, do whatever. There you go. And there you go. There's everyone right there. And there's some interesting sounds there too. Like, you got some tracks like Sith Mania Rock, the single Unforgettable, Slow Drag, Low Call Group, Ghost Ride, which alright, and also Afro AF, which you've seen the album cover. Yeah, the cover. So yeah. I definitely say it's still. This album, I can think of dope back to just to lounge around, relax, do all that shit in, which I can never go for that shit. Let's get into the two Prometheus albums right now. First off, Super What, brought to you by Sawface, and of course the late MF Doom. Now, I have her reports that this was recorded like way back before the death, like around like April, like around the time of the, you know, of the, you know what. You know what? They're releasing it that year, but you know, shit happens. And when I got for this album, well, what you should get from Sarkis and MF Doom, you got this very like this comic book style weird nerdy production or boom bap production with MC7L esoteric and. But the deck, they just, and of course, Doom getting out them bars, branding that, or as you know, as usual. Although we'll say it's more seminal esoteric, mostly. I mean, it's something they did fine here, but I think it wasn't as much as the presence. Doom still got that lyrics in him when you know he was around, and the dude, see what he's doing here. Like you get some tracks like. Mondo Calrissian on the community, and this track, Jason and the Zargonauts. Damn, that's a pun for your ass. That's a pun for your ass. And you can get some features from DMC and Dale Funky Homo Sapien on here, who was on Jason and the Zargonauts, which is alright, nice. This album is, you know, it's very short, and it's short to the point, like. You got 10 songs, 26 minutes, which I could definitely do with that, I could definitely do with that. For Rivers so nice in here, is it fine? And of course, while it's a shame that, of course, we might be a few chances we hear from Doom again, it's still good to hear him on there and have us a step. And now the other album, DMX for Exodus. Now it has been for now 2 months since the passing of DMX, and I know that he was still active in recording an album just before his death. They have got some of it done, but I guess when he passed away, I mean, I know both of it was done. I know they got to scrunch around and do some other things, which I sort of get. And I get they want to get this released just to show more love for X, which he has gotten. And I gotta say, the final product. Oh boy. Yeah. Look, I'll say this. This is the one I was that I was very mixed on. Like, very, very mixed on. Like, I sort of figured, when the day that he did die, unfortunately, I did see a tweet about how Death Jam tried to release some singles or whatever he did, prior to death, just kind of like wrong timing, or just they're just waiting to catch on neck, which is kind of scummy or some stupid shit. But yeah, there is some good news about this album. I will say that while DMX and here we do get the names we know and love for, like he can be vulnerable while also being that rough energy we know him for, which is also getting on for, which is pretty good. Like you get tracks like "That's My Dog" with him lined with the Locks and Swiss Beats, which all right, that was good. I say "Bath Salts" for Jay-Z and Nas was it wasn't the best, but it was it was decent. I think Nas is more. I think this time Nas did a better. Nothing a better verse here than Jay-Z did. Although the better Nas feature on here is the one with "Walking in the Rain," which is the feud in the rain with him exit with his, I think his son Exodus Simmons, and Denon do the vocals, which that is one introspective track that I can get with. Like I give it that touch more on the more personal shit, which again I think the X knows so well. And of course, you get some mixtapes like Hank Clapper of Griselda with Hood Blues, which that is a marriage that I kind of wish should happen more, because him and Griselda collide is like, that is some shit I kind of was digging. I like to hear more of him and Griselda. And the cool thing is, got the one track Take Control with Snoop Dogg, which is more of a G-Funk Central type of track, which I can give it, which I kind of get why they collaborate with Snoop Dogg, given the sense they have showing that Versus thing, which makes sense. And that's when the good stuff ends. Dogs Out, I just kind of like, this sounds like a lower end Party Panther, which, nah, I didn't care about that. The Swiss Beat hook is kind of annoying, and yeah, I didn't care for Lil Wayne's verse on there either. Money with Money Back, yo, yeah. You know, I said Griselda and DMX a good marriage. This is a bad one, like of the new school sound. Yeah, Griselda, yeah, good for them. Money Back, yo, no. Yo, considering saying money, bitches, which I kind of get, which is not uncommon with that. Like he did something like that before, but those sound better. Like Money Cash Hoes or More Money, More Cash, More Hoes. That sound like a better, that's much like way back in the day than this. Like the beats are right, but I didn't get it at all. Homie Down with Your Keys, just I didn't really find, I can't fuck with that at all as much. The weirdest verse, and maybe just me, him, the weirdest song is Sky Griffin's him doing a song of Bottom from U2. Which, okay, I never picture him, I never picture him doing shit with Bottom from U2. I know, back in his heyday, he did a track with Marilyn Manson once, but that was way back. Like I said, that was way back. This is now. Yeah, like, all I gotta say is this, that this album, yeah, it's a very mixed bag. I know that DMX, you know, he's grown, he's 50, he was 50, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, just like, and, you know, his rhymes at first ain't as Chris as he was back in the day, but he can still hold on, to this day, but this one, like, I guess they're trying to honor him and trying to honor him good, but I think they rushed it too quick. Like, they should have, I don't know, like, waited a bit. Like, maybe you should have waited a bit. Like, maybe you should just, I'm not saying that you probably should, like, release a few singles or release and then work on an album like that. I mean, you did more, I'm gonna say you did less of the Mac Miller treatment and more of the Pop Smoke Juice WRLD treatment, as in you want to get out when the concert is still on them. But yeah, this album is I don't want to say it's bad, but I'm not gonna say it's good either. It's not its best or classic. Like, there's few songs here that I like, but if you want to listen to a classic album here, it's like, check his catalog. Check albums like He's Dark and Hell is Hot or Push My Blood. Hey, check out albums like The Great Depression and Grand Champ. Those are great albums I can recommend to you here. This one, if you want to do just to honor him, like I said, like those other albums, but here you forget about this in a day or so. And now on the last album I got to talk about, and consider I didn't skip any albums, which the last one, which we all kind of figured, Mr. J. Cole. It's Cole season again. It's Young Simba or Old Simba. We'll call him Young Simba. He's 36.
Maybe that's, I don't know, by some metric, maybe that's young.
Okay, I get it. Okay, shit.
I'm not sure what metric, but.
Yes, but yes. The return of. Yes, middle. Simba. Okay, just Simba. Fuck it, you're Simba. You're fucking Matthew Broderick now. Or Donald Glover, I don't know. don't know. Yeah. The return of J. Cole with the album The Off Season. And, well, you can tell it's a bit different from his last album, his last couple albums, like Kate, like, you know, Kitty, if we have only got more of a thematic things in it, like, you know, basically, like, here he is, was about, you know, drugs and all that shit, and Fuyas only was about him telling a story to somebody, or anybody, I don't know what. This one doesn't have that narrative. It's a very, very average J. Cole album. Slightly tolerable than the other ones, but it's still the same average J. Cole album there is, or it's like advanced, or basically, basically the off season refers to, like, basically a period of, you know, I'm guessing in sports, which I'm just disagreeing from my thing here, to say, like, is a break of him just holding the skills, which I guess, I mean, I know J. Cole has skills, but. He's doing what he always does. Take from the first track, 95 South, and wait, anything from that one thing that did Woot, there it is, not the other one.
Yeah.
I just found about that now because I forgot. Oh, that's right. That is that fucking group. You just want us like you know, like, shit, too easy for me now. Nigga Cole been going back with CDs for a while. I triple that. I can beat these fucking clowns. No, everybody clapping. We get a 30 song album, do a measly thou. Could put an M on your head. You Luigi brother now. Okay. And yes, he did a Mario Luigi joke there. I mean, I appreciate the effort. Okay. And of course, you got some typical songs about, you know, the struggles that come up, me and the biggest critic, basically all that shit, but the song My Life, which is basically all about that. I will say the weirdest thing about this verse is when Tony Stash has a verse, and, oh, wait, that's another thing about this album.
Yeah.
Features. Yes, features.
He finally budged on that, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. Even on this verse between him and Savage, he has a verse on how he's talking about how his past had traumatized him and his friends died, and how his crew don't do beef anymore or how squashing it, which is basically only solution is basically homicide. And, well, the weirdest thing is, like, he's talking about, it's like he has a good heart by sending teddy bears to mothers of the people he killed, which is, like, that's kind of dark and kind of, like, that's kind of, I think it was like, you send them mama's teddy bears, even though you killed their sons, like, that's either kind of fucked up or, I don't know. I'm like, it's kind of ironic, like, okay, that's kind of weird. I don't think it's better than what 21 Savage is known for back in the day. I feel like At least to me, Savage kind of improves on his verses. Like, I'm not saying they're all spectacular grand. I'm saying, like, they're moderately not as crap as back then. And of course, you get this, get the chorus by Moray, a rapper that I've heard about recently. It's a good chorus because I feel like, oh, hey, someone's doing the same size Cole, because I think other people doing the verses better than Cole, because Cole's not a good singer, or at least not a good vocalist. Is what I should mention. And I should mention in 95 South that Cameron is the hype man. Is the hype man open? Like he have a J. Cole up for some reason. Which, okay. And in a sample of a Lil Jon's Put Your Hood Up. Like where did you hear Lil Jon going? Put your hood up. Put your hood up. Put your you hear that shit. Which is the thing about the beat itself on that joint, it has a similar track, similar to that one Jay-Z track, You Don't Know, off the Blueprint, which I recognize that shit from, and it's just like, okay. I mean, I could bet on You Don't Know, but so, alright. 100 Mills about Cole wanting to improve his rapping skills when he got success already, like, Which I'm pretty sure his source say that his net worth is worth that much, which he's over 100 mil or whatever he said. Okay, that's good for you, J. Cole. And then we got one surprise, the devil, which he focused on how Pac could drive himself and others being fortunate the way he's achieved. And of course, you got little baby doing a feature here, and I think he just, you know, quick rapping and just left. Like, he's like, I'm gonna do my thing and I'm gonna go. And also it's the same beat that Amina used for Track Can't Stop back on his last album, which, okay, so basically, I keep hearing beats used when other people did it. Okay, and of course, got the interlude that we talked about earlier on the podcast, but anyway, I'm gonna talk about this album. Like, I could go more to deep in this, but there is, like, yes, you know, this album got a lot of introspective stuff and all that shit about his past and present career, and that's fine, that's good, but y'all saying this album of the year, all that shit, we're just like, oh, come on, y'all listen to this one time and you think it's album of the year. I have to listen to this shit, like, maybe around 3 to 4 times, or try to listen to it, and it's like, I mean, I get what he's saying, but it's not exactly wisdom here. It's just, it's this same basic stuff that you probably should know already. And yes, it's good to have stuff like this, but it's not that fucking special we keep doing it every time. It's like how people talk about, oh, hip hop, it's like people talk about, it's always about flexing and functioning and how many hoes you fucking want to say. Yeah, we do this shit a lot. That tends to get kind of dull as well, and not the interesting. Well, like it's serviceable. Like, this album is serviceable. Like, it deals with the average stuff, that average shit that Cole does, that they hear on another rapper's album that I don't even give. But yeah, it got a good balance of classic hip hop elements with Cole Hamilton production, with a lot of people like Team Miles, Boy Wonder, Jake One, DJ Dahi, along with people. But yeah, I'm just gonna say right now, if you're basically a J. Cole standard fan, of course you're gonna love this track. Of course you're gonna love this album. You know you love it. You know you're gonna put on your, it's gonna be your best of in the list by the end of this year. Everyone else, yeah, results may vary. You may figure, yeah, like, I don't hate you, but I'm not gonna put you on my best of list. And yeah, that's how I'm gonna end it. This album is just, it's fine. I'm just not gonna listen to it all the time.
Be sure to direct all your hate comments, J. Cole stands, towards your therapist, because who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Find something better to do with your time. Goddamn. To be fair, I haven't been hearing much about this album. Like, so, I don't know, maybe the stands are chilled out or something.
And remember, I said I didn't hate the album, even though some of y'all didn't listen to that. Y'all saying, man, fuck you, J. Cole. Okay, yeah, I'm just gonna stop right now.
Listen, man, people are still salty about the fucking Fantano 6 out of 10 for that one album, you know? Just hip-hop stands are weird like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they did the same thing with Dead Hip-Hop when they reviewed K.O.D. like a couple years back, and they're on their ass as well. They do a positive review on this album, though, I guess they like it better than I do, but yeah.
All right, then. So with
that, need water.
Yeah, that hydration's important. So with that album out of the way, now to move on to the last third of this podcast, which is me, and it's pretty light over on my end. So let's just get into it right away with my only two top picks for the month. Right at the top, the new Black Midi album, Cavalcade, their second full length following up on 2019's Schlagenheim, kicking off in appropriately bombastic fashion with the very, very strange and anxiety-inducing John L. Lots of, you know, drum rolls with those occasional accentuations, the very menacing string work, the constant back and forth interplay from the guitars, not just in how they noodle, but also how they bounce between, like, the audio channels and the mix, the frantic stop-start momentum as, you know, the tempo shifts, speeds up, slows down, just all over the place. the rambly spoken word lyrical passages. It's a lot. Trademark. It's just a lot all at once. And it's almost hilarious that for as much as it hits you right up front with that first track, when it goes into the second track, it's a lot more serene. That being the song Marlene Dietrich, named after the German-American cabaret singer and film actress who was alive from 1901, I think, to 92. She had a lot of, you know, starring roles both in the silent era and especially throughout the sound era around that transitional period, including films from the likes of Alfred Hitchcock, Orson Welles, and a lot of, well, Josef von Sternberg, whoever that is. I mean, I don't know much as far as historical context, but his name popped up a lot in her filmography. So, fitting then that, you know, given her background, the song does feel like, you know, very melancholic, like old cabaret music. It's, you know, pretty chill, all things considered. Then you go into the next track, and the mathiness kicks right back in on Chondromalacia Patella, which, okay, I swear to God, that is a fucking Gundam character. I am sure of it. Maybe he's related to Benarja, or whatever that one dude's name was from that anime. But yeah, you know, between the massive blaring horn lines and solos, and even more strange guitar syncopations and noodling, it's just frantic chaos. Slow maintains this driving momentum as it swaps between these lighter passages of more subtle noodling and horns, you know, hushed in the mix with this jazz fusion vibe, punctuated by, of course, loud, manic blaring of, you know, brass horns and guitar chords. You got Diamond Stuff, which is this very unnervingly droning track with this subtle sort of plucking that goes on for most of the song before it swells into something more melodically and rhythmically developed. If I had to pick a favorite track, it would probably be the briefest Hogwash and Balderdash. That's right, you get both of those things. Pretty short at 2.5 minutes, but it is an energetic, frantic, you know, fueled, chaotic ride. Tons of D-beat-driven drums, this unnerving metallic scraping that pokes its way through all the frantic musical fuzziness and cacophonous noise. It is, as expected, a trip and a half, and it is pretty goddamn, you know, wild. If you like Schlagenheim, you're of course going to enjoy Cavalcade, because it is, in fact, a cavalcade. And then the other top pick here for me, which is from Perturbator. Interestingly, he's dropped, you know, material here and there, the occasional song, EP, hell, he was on that last Health Collaborations album. This is technically the first full-length studio album that Perturbator has produced since the Uncanny Valley dropped in 2016. For context, that is when this podcast started. So it's been some time without a proper full-length from one of the pioneers of synthwave, but now he's back with Lustful Sacraments, and as some of the pre-release singles have implied, this one is trying to move away a bit from that scene that he helped pioneer. There's definitely still all of that electronic synth work as like an essential base in the compositions, but a lot of it leans more towards aspects of very gothic, new wave, post-punk, and even industrial. The title track demonstrates this very well. The dark synth work still in place, this steady four-on-the-floor drum pattern, though there's this very, like, echoing, chorus-laden guitar melody that floats in and out of the mix. It's still very moody and dramatic, but it definitely switches things up a bit. Then getting into the next track, Excess, which is a lot more vocally driven. Yeah, you definitely hear, like, more singing on this song as well as choppy vocal samples. It's got a very intense driving momentum, much more in line with, like, you know, a rock punk banger. Especially with, like, those guitar melodies and the rapid, you know, hi-hat rolls and the stomping kick work. Death of the Soul is a bit more typical of his style, you know, on previous albums, where it's definitely, like, more all synths. That saturated bass line and the mechanical effects and additional drum elements feeling very industrial and mechanic. The Other Place has this very satisfying groove to it with the kick rhythms, the synths swelling in all of the right spots, those tempo switches to more halftime progressions, and of course a lot of the dark synth work as well. Probably one of the standouts here is Messaline. Well, the standout in terms of how it brings all of these ideas together to their fullest extent. It's very intensely melancholic and moody with its guitar melodies. There's a huge saturation of very melodic synths and, you know, bass-heavy synthesizer work. A lot of intense banging rhythms. Everything. It's the whole kitchen sink at once. It's really interesting to see, you know, Perturbator evolve his style into this particular form, a way that makes sense given, you know, the distinct relationship between these genre stylings while still, you know, imbuing his own, you know, traits onto it. I'm very interested. I want to see, maybe it won't take more than 5 years for the next full length, but I do want to at least be a little bit curious where things go from here. So, gotta keep an ear out. Now for the quick round of albums. First up, one that I didn't bring up earlier. It's been about 3 years since we last heard anything from the group Death Grips. However, their drummer Zach Hill has started this new project called Undo K from Hot, who dropped their debut full-length Gas, Get a Star. And the best way to describe this album is that it's kind of a mashup of the production and songwriting traits of both Government Plates as well as Bottomless Pit, with these very saturated electronic glitchy soundscapes and this offbeat repetitive musical structure. However, with very little in terms of, you know, formal vocals and hooks. It's just kind of this electronic cavalcade in a sense. It's pretty good for what it is. It's just making me think, wow, we haven't had a new Death Grips album in like 3 goddamn years. That might as well be an eternity in their time. Moving on to the next one. Since the Adult Swim singles kicked off with a song by the band Ice Age, who dropped a new album Seek Shelter last month, out of curiosity, I delved through their albums, this one included, and this is an interesting release. Like, it's not an absolute favorite of mine, but I do dig it. Maybe it's all the pianos and the twang and some of the vocal performances here, but there's kind of this Britpop thing running through a lot of the more typical post-punk vibes here. Although I will say it's certainly more dignified and better written in its approach than bullshit like, say, I don't know, other Britpop acts like the Gallagher douchebags and whatever the fuck they do. Bastards. Anyway, moving on to an EP here. The Devil Wears Prada with Zombie 2, or Z2, rather. Trying to give this one as measured of a reaction I can give because I don't necessarily want to be, it's bad because metalcore, like, not by default anyway, but it's not the worst thing. I mean, I've heard worse in the broad scope of metalcore, and this album isn't anything special, even though, as we've mentioned, this band can and has in fact done better before, although we're seriously having to think that, you know, Dead Throne is a fluke. But anyway, it's competent enough. Strangely, the best songs on the EP, at least relatively speaking, are the few that weren't released as singles, like Nora and especially Forlorn. There's a decent energy here and there. The production is pretty solid. It's just this sort of datedness of the songwriting, along with just the fact that Mike's vocals just aren't really there as far as the harsh, you know, screams and stuff are concerned. And that kind of kills a lot of it for me, where it's just there. Rag and Bone Man, a soul gospel singer with a second album, Life by Misadventure. I know some mutual, you know, friends of mine that are really into this guy, and I decided to check him out of curiosity, first album in this one, and taking the gospel soul foundation of his debut album in a different direction somewhat, this one goes more in the vibe of, like, Nashville blues and country. It's not fully my thing, but credit where it's due, Rag and Bone Man is an absolutely fantastic gospel and soul singer, and that remains the biggest strength of this album from, you know, beginning to end. Then going on, finally, to the two posthumous hip-hop releases, Sarface and MF Doom with Super What. I'll say the production is, of course, on point. The lyrics and a lot of, like, the sampling and stuff very heavily emphasizes a lot of the comic book villain motifs that you would expect from these two guys. Well, these two entities, rather. Also, who do you think was involved in the production of this album that was going around listening to online podcasts? I still can't believe I can officially say the Rap Critic showed up on an MF Doom project. That's fucking wild, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Okay, I did not know that. Okay.
Oh, I forget the exact track, but it's the one that has all these samples of people talking about, like, you know, Sarface and MF Doom. You know, that interlude, and one of them is a sample of the podcast that he does with Muse Productions going off. Hmm. Yeah, that's a trip. Holy shit. And then last of these is, of course, the DMX album Exodus. And I will say it's, yeah, a little bit tough to talk about this one because, you know, just how short notice and sudden the timing of the events of this album is. What I'll say is there's some decent material in a lot of places. Of course, the standout, of course, being Hood Blues with the Griselda guys all on it and everything. But it does feel like the album itself had to be very suddenly pieced together to meet some kind of a deadline. I mean, to be fair to everyone involved, the album was apparently being worked on for some time at this point. And so you could probably tell by the fact that there was that one standalone single released the day of his passing that there was already material in the pipeline before he had to be rushed to the hospital. So I don't necessarily want to say this was like a full-on cash-in, but it does feel like they had to work with what they had, all short notice and everything. That's really all I have to say on that. And now to the low light here, which is, yeah, surprise, surprise, Weezer with Van Weezer, but it's not even like a funny bad or memorable bad or anything. It's just, like, I am just tired. Like, second album we get from them this year, first attempt at, like, a proper full band recording or something since, fuck, I don't even know when. Like, can I just phone this in? I mean, it's, the band's there at least, so I guess it sounds more like Weezer than Weezer had before. I mean, I swear to God, the second it gets to All the Good Ones, and that's a song that mixes its, you know, power chord progression with that stomp, clap, rhythm, it's like Beverly Hills Part 2. Yeah. And the single End of the Game, which is fine, and honestly at this point I'm realizing that, you know, this album is basically Maladroit Part 2 of all the albums to do like a sequel to. And yeah, I still can't believe Blue Dream. It's like, so last month we had In the Hall of the Mountain King covered by The Offspring. And this time around, we have the works of Ozzy Osbourne filtered from the band that wrote Can't Stop Partying. Who asked for this? I want names. I just want to talk. Although, sadly, the sad thing is that this and even the following track, One More Hit, are unfortunately the best parts of the record, all things considered. That's not to say they're good or anything, just that technically speaking, they're the best parts. If only because, fuck, hearing them just straight up, you know, crib from Ozzy is such a baffling creative decision that it's at least interesting. And, you know, One More Hit has this really bizarre part where for like 30 seconds it goes into full-on 80s thrash and I don't understand what's happening. It's like, this album just doesn't mean anything. Like, the only way I can imagine this album would mean anything to anyone either way would be if you ignored everything released between the White album and now, which is like, fuck me, that, how many albums has that been? I gotta fucking look this up. That's just so much shit. Like, my bet is 5. I'm like, I am absolutely certain that there's been like at least 5 albums. Actually, should we include Ubate in that? Because that's when people started giving a shit about Weezer again. Oh, here we are. Okay, so Everything Will Be Alright in the End, White Album, Pacific Daydream, Teal, Black, Okay, that's like 6 goddamn albums. Not including Van Weezer. What the fuck?
That's in the course of this year? Or the...
No, just like, to prove my earlier point, like, although that is, if we're starting from the White album, that's 6 albums in the span of, like, 5 years. And they don't even have the creative novelty of something like King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. By the way, they dropped a new album in June. I gotta get my ears on that. This will be more interesting than this. Yikes. Anyway, yeah, that'll... I've said my piece, and that'll do it for this month's roundup. Remember, as always, you can email me, robert@sororesolution.com, for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, as well as Spotify now. Be sure to visit the website, sororesolution.com, written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all that business. And of course, remember to click the playlist, you know, in the description if you want to hear our favorite cuts from our favorite albums of this past month. Excuse me. We're not putting in any Weezer because bleh. Obviously. And yeah, with that out of the way, that'll about do it for this album roundup. And we'll, of course, be back next week with our usual weekly business. So until next time, a Lord of the Rings anime. Huh.
I've heard worse ideas.